having a surreal experience because I'm talking to you here on Mason in Ireland on 710 ESPN, while in the background I've got the jump on, and there you are on the jump at the same time.
I did that about, I don't know, 15 minutes ago. I still look camera ready, but I'm sitting now in my bedroom where I always am.
So you're working on a big story. I just heard you talk about it. A big story about 1 year ago tomorrow and exactly what happened when the Rudy Gobert incident went down. When does your story come out?
It comes out tonight, tomorrow-ish. It's sort of overnight, I think, is the is the plan, because today is March 10th and tomorrow is March 11th. So we're going to kind of, you know, hey, it's March 10th. Think about March 11th. We're going to do it like that. And it's it'll be an interesting story, because remember last week when I had to take that call from Adam Silver? That was that was part of it. That was what that was for.
Big deal. And, you're a big deal.
Yeah. And well, sometimes, I mean, not all the time. Sometimes I'm just sitting in my house, you know, playing with the cat and the 2-year-old. So,
but usually a big deal.
Well, you know,
so you talked to Adam Silver and?
Yeah. And one of the things I thought was cool, encouraging, et cetera, what we were talking about March 11th last year, but he said, you know, what he's learned essentially is, you know, you can't predict too far in the future. The virus is in charge. But right now, as we sit here today, he is more optimistic than he has been in a while that by the beginning of next year, the NBA will be back to something like normal. We don't know if it'll be normal. Fully normal, but something like normal, based off of, you know, where we are in the vaccine rollout, the case numbers, the understanding of the virus. Like, that's what he is hoping for. And that to me is, you know, I was thinking, well, maybe even something like the playoffs. Okay. But he's being conservative.
Does he not think there's any shot at the playoffs? I would imagine that the way things are going, and I don't understand LA's color thing, it's, we're trying to get to red. At some point, don't you think there will be fans at Staples Center for playoff games?
I think so. I mean, look, they're opening up indoor dining to a, I just got a note saying that to a certain capacity, right? So that's a big thing. So, because initially, you know, opening up an outdoor venue is different than opening an indoor venue.
Correct. Like Dodger Stadium, like, you know, like Angel Stadium, outdoor venues is different.
Right. SoFi would be that. But indoors, that, you know, the air circulating is different than outdoors. But, you know, one of the things, a player brought this up to me recently. You know, there's about half the arenas in the league right now have opened up to fans in some respects, right?
Like, yeah.
Whether it be 1,000 fans or 5,000 fans. One of the biggest states that has that allows the most fans right now is Utah. There was about 6,000 fans. When the Lakers played the Jazz.
So, well, I just saw the Texas Rangers are going to be 100% capacity on opening day.
Well, it's not like they're going to fill it anyway. It's the Rangers, but still, that sounds like too much to me. Okay, but even 2,000 fans is better than nothing. Okay, and if you got 6,000 fans in Utah, that's like pretty much half capacity. Talk about home court advantage. Like, you know, last year didn't matter. We didn't worry about home court or whatever it was in the bubble. But this year, that really could be an advantage for the Jazz.
You think 6,000 fans makes a difference?
Oh, yeah. I mean, ask any players. I mean, that's one of the biggest things that everybody talks about this year is the lack of fans and how that changes the feel of the game, the momentum. If Utah, which already has one of the best home court advantages in the league based off of, the altitude.
And the best record
the travel.
In the West.
Yeah, best record in the West. So they're going to have that number one seed most likely. If they've got a crowd that's half full, that's pretty good. And that's an advantage for them over, let's say, the LA teams if they either don't have any fans or have just a very limited amount.
You know, I have such a clear recollection of that night, which would be March the 11th of last year, because I was wrapping up the show. And Ireland did one of his things where he said, I've got to get out of here early. I'm not staying on. So Ireland took off. Meanwhile, the game had been postponed, hadn't been postponed yet, but it was delayed at Oklahoma City. And Alan Sliwa and I were on the air together. And I was like, you know what? This is breaking news. This is really important story. I'm going to hang out with you. So me and Sliwa did that together.
Wow.
And we're actually on the air through that entire process until the game was canceled. And then do you remember what the big surprise at the very end of all that stuff was?
Tom Hanks.
Tom Hanks. Yeah. We got news that Tom Hanks had COVID. So that was the night the world really did change. I would say.
It really was.
And Lindsay, what was the date, do you think, was our last show before we went away? Before we all came home? March the 12th? Oh, Lindsay's not there.
But yeah, it was the 12th, Mace. It was the 12th.
It was the 12th. That was the last show in studio.
It was, yeah.
Right. So as of Monday, we will be doing the show from home for over a full year, which is just crazy to me. Well, I look forward to the piece, Momo.
Thanks.
It was you teed it up really well on the jump. And by the way, Jackie McMullen's going to be with us in about 40 minutes, so make sure you're here for that. The Hall of Famer, Jackie McMullen. So here's the burning question for the day: are the Lakers still the team to beat in the NBA this year? Obviously, they're defending champions. Obviously, we anticipate Anthony Davis coming back, hopefully sooner rather than later, but at least soon we anticipate him, and it's a much different team with Anthony Davis. But there are people who now think that Brooklyn, that Utah, that the Clippers, that Philly, that they may be the teams to beat. Who, in your mind, Momo, is the team to beat? Is it still the Lakers?
Yeah, still the Lakers. Come on. They're the defending champs. And I think even even players in the league would tell you that, right? I mean, Robert Horry was just on the jump with us a little while ago talking about the MVP race, where in Vegas they have moved Joel Embiid ahead of LeBron as the favorite for MVP. Okay. And I'm sure that's because Embiid's last 2 to 3 weeks have been awesome, and LeBron has been good but not MVP caliber, and the Lakers have lost 6 of 8, 7 of 10. It's, with Anthony Davis out. So, yeah, that's hurt LeBron's MVP case. But I still think when you get down to it, they're the defending champs. If they're healthy, and that is the big if, they should be the team to beat. Utah has gone on runs like this before. They have had great regular season runs, and that's not to discount how good they are. They absolutely should be respected and feared, but the defending champs got better in the offseason. They got better. So why are we talking about them like they've fallen off?
I think what it is it's a little bit of recency bias. So, for example, we've seen them lose 7 out of 10 into the break. And even though there's no Anthony Davis, you still think, I don't know. I don't know about the depth. I don't know about the three-point shooting. I really do question the three-point shooting, and I really do question front court depth. And I don't know if those things are, they're going to be able to address those things at the trade deadline, March 25, or in the buyout market. But I've started to worry more about the three-point shooting than I have about the front court depth. What do you think?
Yeah, I have a little bit, just because it's not like when you look back on that Laker team, you don't look back and go, okay, Dwight Howard and JaVale were, huge pieces for that championship run. When it came down to it, it was LeBron and AD, right? But Dwight played a very significant role in some of those playoff series because of just flat out matchups. Like, Dwight was an important guy, and I haven't seen that from Marc Gasol yet. And I know why they made the switch. It was a sort of philosophical decision, thinking Marc Gasol can give them more offense. He can give them more of another playmaker out there, which is what was really needed, especially from that spot. Good three-point shooter, gives them that stretch five. So, I get that decision. It was a sound decision, but so far he's been a bit of a disappointment. Like, he hasn't really dominated inside defensively like he used to when he was winning Defensive Player of the Years.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, they're 21st in three-point shooting.
Yeah.
And after a really good start where they were shooting close to 40% from three, they really went into the tank at some point. KCP has been inconsistent. Kyle Kuzma isn't making them like he was making them early in the year. Alex Caruso, maybe that was a little bit of a mirage early in the season. He was shooting like 42% from three, 43% from three. And you've got to be able to knock down three balls if you're going to be competitive in the postseason. We live in an era where everybody's taking 33s a game.
Yeah, and do you think they will? Will they make them when it matters? Will they make enough?
I feel like they will. I feel like they're missing a couple of shooters that they had last. I think they're missing Danny Green. I think they're missing not a great point, a good three-point shooter in Avery Bradley.
Yeah.
And you could say that maybe this is a team that is on a cold streak from beyond the arc.
Okay.
You can also say that without Anthony Davis on the floor, the defenses have a tendency to be able to protect the arc a little bit better. There's probably more defense at the three-point line because you don't have that force down low in Anthony Davis. You can sort of play out a little bit away from the basket. Maybe all that is a function of Anthony Davis. I'll be honest. I may be the only guy that is not on the Brooklyn Nets.
I am on the Brooklyn Nets.
You are.
Yeah, I am. It's just the way that James Harden's playing, because I feel like he really is in this place where he's willing to do whatever they need him to do. Like when Kevin Durant comes back, I think he'll defer to him. I do.
You do.
I don't think he's going to be selfish. The guy that I worry about not deferring would be Kyrie.
Well, Kyrie, sure.
Yeah, I mean, he's the guy, you know. It's always his show.
See, I think it's fine to talk. First of all, I think they're in a honeymoon period. And when guys first get together, I totally understand that. And it works and everybody sacrifices. But when the games get big and the moments get to be more high leverage moments, I still think there's going to be that moment where somebody says, hey, I think I should take the shot, or I think I should take the shot, or why did he get the shot? Why is he getting the glory that goes along with this game-winning shot? I think all those things, I think the egos are yet to play out. Because I don't think we know, and in particular, Kyrie is a, let's just call him a combustible personality.
Yeah, and there is something to be said for the fact that the two lead coaches there, Steve Nash and Mike D'Antoni, James Harden, three of their main guys have not won before. Right, they have not closed the deal, and the Lakers guys all just did that last year. Like LeBron has done that four times. Frank Vogel has been a championship coach. Like this is a championship proven organization, 17 times over. But also last year, and there's something to be said for it. I mean, there's no one in the East right now that you really do you feel like there's anyone in the East that you really completely trust come clutch time, playoff time?
Come clutch time. I mean, I like Philly a lot. I love what Daryl Morey did in Philly. I love Joel Embiid. Ben Simmons is a walking triple-double right now.
Yeah.
They've got shooters in Shake Milton and Seth Curry and Danny Green now. They've got some veteranship. They've got some defense on the wing. I think that's a really good-looking team and one that will give Brooklyn a run, a serious run. Philly
run,
is my pick. I'm expecting a Philly-Lakers final.
Well, I would love nothing better than that, because that is such a fun. First of all, if it's Brooklyn and Philly in the Eastern Conference Finals, how fun is that?
Because that's a great series.
It's the road not taken versus the road taken, right? So they both were very in on the trade for James Harden. It came down to Philly and Brooklyn, and Philly ultimately didn't give up more. Like I don't know how much Houston was ever really going to trade Harden to Philly. There was some bad blood there with Daryl Morey and all of that. But they kept asking for more. You know, there was more and more and more. And Philly went a long way, but they have ultimately just got to be the point where it's like, no, this is getting dumb. Like, this is, you're gutting the team. It's too much. It's not the right return. And so Philly, you know, Brooklyn was willing to put those four first round picks in and all those players and, you know, sacrifice so much depth. They were willing to do that. They went that extra bit.
Yep.
And I think because, you know, it's one team really went for it and the other team said, no, we kind of like our guys. And even though we are intrigued by the possibility of what Joel Embiid and James Harden would look like together. Wow. That would be fascinating.
Yeah.
They ultimately decided not to do it. And so it's the road taken versus the road not taken. And I think it's going to play out all season long in that Eastern Conference.
So I guess who is the Lakers' biggest threat for the title this year?
What do you think? Do we say the Clippers? Do we say Utah?
877-710-ESPN. Let's see what you guys say. Coming up next, Shanae Ogumike, who was on First Take today, talked about who she thinks the Lakers' greatest threat is. And Jay Williams talked about it, too. We got that coming up for you. Plus, Momo, fight in flight. A fight in flight. I will explain
that
what that is coming up next for you. Mason Ireland, Momo in for John, 710 ESPN.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Is the biggest threat to the Lakers? Who is the biggest threat to the Lakers? I still believe they are championship favorites. I believe they're going to win back-to-back NBA championships. I feel good about it. As long as Anthony Davis is healthy, I think we are the team to beat. Not everybody agrees. Not everybody has taken that position. And I want to bring you a sampling of that. First of all, here's Shanae Agumake from ESPN, host of – she was on First Take today. Here she is on who she thinks is the biggest threat to the Lakers.
I'm looking at the Clippers still, largely because they made this big gamble in switching their head coaches from Doc Rivers to Ty Lue to sort of help Paul George be great again, right? Paul George said, hey, like these pin downs, that's not my speed. That's not my style. They made that big gamble, and it sort of paid off when it comes to Paul George's game so far, you know, this season. So I really do think it'll come down to the city of L.A. Even though I love what, you know, Utah has been able to do so far this season, they will make noise based on the, you know, confidence they're building in the regular season. But right now, they have a combination of defense, of offense, of now coaching that sort of is helping their stars get over the mental humps. And I do think that they're still the biggest threat to the Lakers in the West.
Let me follow that up. Here's Jay Williams from the Keyshawn Morning Show on the Western Conference Finals.
The Battle of LA. It will finally be here, Key. It will be here. We will get a chance to see that this year.
Is it really a battle?
It will be. I mean, right now, without AD, it will be. It just won't be in the Western Conference Finals. We will see this battle in the Western Conference Semifinals. Look, the Clippers still need a point guard. We talked about this. I thought CP3, yes, he has the Phoenix Suns, second place right now in the Western Conference. I would have loved to see him go back to the Clippers and play with the likes of Kawhi and Paul George. But with the way this is going to work out, with what LeBron James is going to have to do in the second part of the season, if AD does not come back to play, I think we're going to see the Clippers and the Lakers in the Western Conference semifinals instead of the Western Conference final.
Boy, that would be a disappointment if we see him in the Western Conference semifinals.
Yeah, that's how it lines up right now, though.
Because he's got them what? He would have them drifting down to the six and playing the Clippers at the three, maybe something like that.
Well, here's the thing. The Lakers right now are in third now. Is that right?
Phoenix third place.
Phoenix is in second, okay? And Phoenix is in second. The Clippers, so, like, Utah looks like – I think Utah is going to finish first, don't you think? I mean,
yeah, I think they're
going to really
win the
have
West.
A swoon.
They're on a mission.
They're on a, and they have also one of the easiest schedules left, too. The Lakers have a tough schedule coming, you know, ahead. And so all you have to do is if they finish fourth, then they would play Utah in the semifinals. And then the Clippers, if they finish in that 2-3, then you could still have the Western Conference Finals. So it's that seeding is going to really be interesting as we come down the stretch. Because Phoenix, to me, I don't know that I buy them as
you're not buying
seed
them
right now. And I think
they
they're good.
Really, really good.
They do. They also haven't played with any kind of pressure yet this year. It's different,
sure.
You know, when people start expecting things of you. Right now they're just they're a really nice team that everybody was thinking would have a good year, and it looks like they are, but are they really going to do that, you know, when now that everything's expected? Still a very young team.
Yeah. But led by a veteran,
yeah.
Chris Paul. Let's go to Joe in Northridge. Joe, you're on 710 ESPN. What's up, man?
Hey, what's up, guys? First of all, I want to say I love you guys. Momo, this is the first time I'm actually being able to talk to you. I love everything you do.
Oh,
keep
thanks,
up
man.
The good work. You're very welcome. Now, the Lakers, they will repeat just because of the core players that we have. AD is out. He's injured, but he's going to be back full force. Marc Gasol will be back full force. And we have Kuzma, who is slipping a little bit, but I know he will be in full force. We are a force to be reckoned with. Now, Utah, they have a great team. They are in first place right now. Phoenix, they're lucky to be in second place. but they will not beat the Lakers in a playoff series. East Coast, I really think the Nets are going to be up there, and Philadelphia might be up there. They'll be battling for the East Coast. So I'm going to say West Coast Lakers, East Coast, either the Nets or Philly representing for the championship. I love you guys. I want to hang up because I want to hear you guys. Okay,
all right, cool. Thank you very much awesome. For the phone call. Yeah, I mean, I think he sort of nailed it. The one thing that scares me about the idea of when AD comes back.
Yeah.
I think the Lakers are a 500 team without AD. Do you think that's fair to say?
No, I think they're a little better than that. A little better than
they've lost 7 out of 10.
I know, but that was a tough schedule too. And they also didn't have Schroeder for 4 or 5.
They didn't
games.
Have Schroeder for a stretch. Yeah. You're right. So you're right. That made a difference.
I think they're more than 500, but you know.
If they drift down a little bit, mm-hmm. like for example, they drift down to say the 6 because okay. Anthony Davis doesn't come back as quickly as we think. In that world, we would probably play the Clippers in the first round. See, that's why seeding is not important.
Right.
But it is kind of important.
It is.
You don't want to drift so far down that you have a really tough draw in the first series. You want to catch somebody who's not – like right now, I think the biggest threat to the Lakers is the Clippers.
Wow.
Brooklyn, I still have questions about Brooklyn. I don't think Philly can play with the Lakers. I think their biggest threat, as much as I hate the Clippers, as much as I despise the Clippers, I still believe that they are the biggest threat. Their one glaring flaw is the lack of a point guard. They've got Lou Williams, who sort of mm-hmm. initiates the offense when he's out there. Patrick Beverley is the primary point guard. But I think if they were to find a way to upgrade at point guard, they might be able to give us a run. I don't know who's out there, who could be out there on the buyout market. Those guys don't necessarily exist for everybody. But I think the Clippers are the biggest threat to the Lakers right now.
Wow. It's just hard for me to hear those words coming out of your mouth.
I know. It's terrible.
I think you're right, though. I still am there. And this is underrated, but I think that last year they're just not good as front runners. Like, they're not good. They don't know how to be in that. Like, there's franchises, teams that are hunters and hunted, right? The Clippers have always been underdogs. They're better when they're underdogs. They don't necessarily do well as the team to beat. And so they're right back as underdogs now.
Like, well, especially after the crash and burn last year.
Yeah. Like, nobody expects anything of them.
And that leaves a mark, right?
Yeah,
that leaves a mark, crashing and burning at that mm-hmm. point when you blow the lead in the series like that. In playoff P and all that stuff. Paul George is having... I mean, I know this because he's on my fantasy. He's having a monster year.
Yeah.
Paul George is having a monster year for them. And Kawhi has been there. I don't like the glaring flaw at point mm-hmm. guard. But I think this year, that is our biggest threat.
I think that's right. I mean, to me, it's when you look at the teams, who's most talented, I still think it's out west because all the teams in the East, I am on that Brooklyn train. I do think that they are the most talented team in the league.
They're the most talented. I just don't know if it adds up.
Yeah, does it add up? And do you believe in those particular individuals? I think that matters when it comes down to it. Like,
yeah.
You know, no, and that's not disrespectful. I'm not trying to be disrespectful. It's just, do I believe in that group of volatile personalities that have had, you know, like, you know, Kevin Durant's won, Kyrie Irving's won, so we can't take that away from them. But
can the ego stay in check? That's the question.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
And can the ego stay in check?
It's a lot to make work. You know, I still believe in LeBron James, right? He's done it 4 times.
Give me LeBron every day of the week and twice on Sunday. So here's the story. I meant to say fight on a flight. I wanted to get this in there.
Okay.
And you've traveled a lot, so you know. And I want you to hold your answer for the other side of this break.
All right.
there was a fight on a flight from Dallas to Atlanta yesterday. And it was over a guy reclining his seat.
Oh.
A guy reclining his seat on the plane. And I want to know your thoughts on reclined seat etiquette on a commercial airline flight.
Okay.
That's coming up next. Plus, Jackie McMullen is going to join us in about 15 minutes. Make sure you're there for that. Hall of Famer. We'll get into the Lakers and the Nets and all that stuff we've been talking about. Mesa in Ireland, 710 ESPN. Size 14 feet.
No way.
Yes.
What are you, like an NBA player?
Close. I didn't get the height, but I got the feet. So,
what else did you
get?
Oh, sorry. I had to go there. I'm sorry.
I'd love to dig back into that first 6 months of the pandemic when Ireland were on the air when we were on the air every single day.
Yeah.
Trying to come up with crazy stuff to occupy time with no sports going on. That was some of the most challenging radio we've ever done.
Yeah, but it was good.
Thank God sports came back. Thank God sports came back.
I thought it was good. It was like nonstop fast track, wasn't it?
It was. We did an hour of fast track every day at 5 o'clock. By the way, I want to make sure everybody knows, coming up Friday, 1:55 sharp, fast track returns to Mesa and Ireland. By popular demand, Fast Track is coming back. So make sure you're here every day at 1:55 when we bring back our favorite feature that we had for years on the show and was inexplicably killed by Greg Bergman and Boss Amanda. Never understood it. Never understood it. By the way, put out a poll. Oh, go ahead, Lynch.
Yeah? Well, I thought you killed it because you guys really overdid it during that first 6 months, right? Wasn't it
maybe
just like the whole show was Fast Track?
Maybe we just gave it a break. Maybe we just rested Fast Track and now it's coming back.
Yeah, that makes sense.
By the way, poll online, who is the Lakers' biggest threat? It just started, so there are fewer than 100 votes, but it is Brooklyn 70%, Clippers 17%, Utah 9%, and Philly 4%. So that's early running. You can vote on that at Venice Mace, M-A-S-E. So, Momo, flight from Dallas to Atlanta.
All right.
You know the guy at the very back of the plane who can't recline his seat at all? Like he's just.
Yes, I've been in that seat. Yep.
He has no recline ability. So the guy in front of him decided to recline. And the guy in the back who couldn't recline his seat got so pissed off, he started a fist fight with the guy who
reclined. Oh my gosh.
So here's a question. What is the proper etiquette for reclining your plane on a flight? Now, I feel bad for the guy who's at the very back who can't recline at all. And then somebody reclines in front of him. That guy is really choked off. But when you're on a plane and you fly a lot for work and all that stuff, what is the appropriate etiquette for reclining your seat?
I believe that if you are in that the row ahead of the back row where they can't recline, you can recline your seat, but just a little bit. I think that I think it's bad form to go all the way back. You know, it's like there's a big difference between, you know, a couple of inches and all the way back. Cause that now you're really in somebody's lap and then they have no recourse. They have no escape. And I think that, and if you want to, you could even say to them, if you could turn around, see, because I thought you should turn around and say, do you mind if I recline my seat a little bit?
Yeah, that's what I do.
But then.
Yeah, Jorge, is that what you turn around and you say.
I've turned around several times and I said, hey, do you mind? I'm going to recline my seat a little bit. I'm just going to let you know before, you know, I do it. And they're like, oh, thank you for asking.
But it kind of puts it on them. Yeah. No, it's nice to ask, but then it kind of like puts it's a hard choice because, like, the truth is, I do mind. I don't really want you to do it. And if I say that, then I'm the jerk.
No, but the fact that I asked every time,
I know,
it was said yes, I don't mind it.
Yeah. But that makes you feel better, but it actually doesn't actually solve the
problem.
Yeah,
the other person is still ticked off that you recline. Now, I personally believe if I've got a seat that will recline, I have. Yep. It is my God-given right to recline.
Right.
It is. I am legally in the right. Why would they put that recline button in if you're not supposed to recline? Now, I often will turn around and say, hey, dude, I'm about to recline my seat, so your iPad's probably going to fall off your little table. Something like that. So I do believe it is my God-given right to recline.
Mm. You don't.
It's
feel
also my armrest, by the way. That is my armrest.
I agree with you. So this the armrest thing is a much bigger issue for me than the seat reclining, because to me, seat reclining is annoying and uncomfortable, but it's kind of hard to object because like I should be able to recline my seat too, right?
Right.
But the armrest thing, it's always a battle. And I find that when I sit next to a guy, it's like if he's in the middle, if the guy in the middle, they just assume that because I'm a lady and I'm smaller than them or whatever, that they should be able to have the whole armrest. And I think there's a little negotiation that should go on.
Sure.
You know, I think that you can't have both armrests, but you can. There's a way to do armrests where you kind of have the front, or you kind of have the half of the armrest.
Yeah.
You kind of, right? There's a way.
Life belongs to the bold, Momo. I just take them both.
Yeah, you're that guy. You're the guy.
I am that guy. I just take both armrests.
You're annoying, especially if you're in the aisle or the window, and I'm in the middle, and the guy on either side of me. What if you guys? I should have at least some armrest. Like to me, the middle seat.
I'm on the aisle. You're not getting my armrest. That armrest belongs to me.
No, my rule is if I get there first. My rule is if I get there first, I get the armrest. That's it.
There you go. There you go, Jorge. I like that.
Do you think this is like gendered? Do you think this is like guys just feel entitled to the armrest because they're guys?
No, I think there are women that feel entitled to the armrest. I don't think there's any.
Lens, what do you
think? I don't think sex has anything to do with it.
I think it's more of a size thing.
Lindsay, what's that? You think it's more of a...
It's more of a size thing. Like, if I'm sitting next to somebody who's twice the size of me, I think that I'm going to give them a break and give them the armrest because what do I need the armrest for? They're sitting there all, like, cramped up, you know? I just feel like that's the courteous thing to do.
Yeah, I'm just taking it. I'll be honest. I'm just taking it.
Yeah, and I know that you also don't warn them and say, hey, by the way, I'm going to recline so your iPad might fall.
No, I really do.
Definitely don't even do that.
I do really warn them.
Okay. All right. What do you mean?
I do say, hey,
has anyone ever said, yeah, I do
mind? Your computer's about to hit the floor.
In my case, they've never said no. Nope.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, I never say no, even though I would like to. Hey, hang on a second. Let's go to Tony in... Oh, gone. 877-710-ESPN. Sorry about that. All right. So LaMelo Ball has indicated, this is through Jalen Rose, and we've got sound of Jalen. This is from a podcast. Jalen Rose talking about the Golden State Warriors and what they said to LaMelo Ball before the draft. Don't have it yet. This segment is a misfire.
Well, that's we can just right, tell them what right. they said. You want to just say?
Yeah. So Jalen Rose reported. I guess he reported or said on a podcast.
He said on his podcast, on the Jalen and Jacoby podcast.
Okay. Said the Warriors had told LaMelo Ball that they were going to take him, and they ended up taking James Wiseman instead. So, Momo... Once you say something like that, once you indicate you're the guy, is it really bad form to change your mind and not tell the guy?
Yeah, but that's not what happened. I don't think they ever were going to take LaMelo. I think that whatever Jalen heard is wrong. I mean, sorry. I don't think that they were always on Wiseman. And if LaMelo thought that that's what they said, or if his agent thought that, there's some miscommunication. Because I think they were always taking James Wiseman. I remember speaking to the Warriors right before that. They had never wavered. Now, there's a part of me that says, could they have lied because they wanted to take LaMelo the whole time? Sure, but I really think they like James Wiseman. And I know that they worked out. They had flown to see Wiseman and LaMelo and Anthony Edwards privately before the draft. And they,
right.
They were prepared to take either any of the three of them. Like if Wiseman wasn't there, let's say LaMelo went number one, let's say the Timberwolves pull off some kind of a trade or whatever it is. So they really like LaMelo, but they already have Steph Curry. And you know, even though LaMelo has, I think to me, run away with the rookie of the year race.
Oh, run away with, by the way, the best player in the draft. I mean,
so far,
LaMelo Ball has turned out to be the best player in the draft, and I think has the most upside. And I think Golden State made a mistake. I think they drafted for fit instead of they drafted for need and fit as opposed to drafting the best player on the board. But I think there will come a point in the Warriors' future where they will look at LaMelo Ball and say, damn, we should have drafted him.
I don't know. I still think Wiseman's going to be really good.
Wiseman's good.
He is really young, but he is a smart kid, wants to learn, good attitude, and he's the type of guy that in a year or two, you're going to go, wow, he'll really blossom.
But, LaMelo is racking up triple-doubles already.
Okay, are they winning?
Well, does anybody win in Charlotte?
Okay, I agreed, but I'm just saying I don't know that that style would fit there, what they do. I don't know if he's I think he's a really good player. I think he is going to win Rookie of the Year. I am very high on him. I don't want
16 points,
diminish
6
him.
Rebounds, 6 assists, 2 steals a game.
Yeah,
shooting 38% really from 3.
I just don't know how that fits the way the Warriors play. It's just different.
Do you agree they made that pick based on fit and not based on talent?
No. I thought Wiseman – LaMelo to me was the biggest upside and the biggest downside. Like, he had the biggest boom or bust possibility.
Right.
And I think Wiseman, they felt solid about, like, maybe he is going to top out as a good starter and not an all-star or a superstar. Maybe he won't be that. But I think he has a lot of upside, too. You just haven't quite seen it yet.
Okay.
And
all right.
It doesn't take away from LaMelo. But, like, God bless him. LaMelo, LeVar, congratulations. LeVar told me this when LaMelo was 14 years old. I remember I did a story out there in Chino.
Yep.
And I was writing about Lonzo, and he was going to be the 2 pick, and he was trying to speak it into existence, et cetera. LeVar Ball said straight face, and everything he says was a straight face, but he says a lot of crazy things, okay? So,
and LaMelo's going to be the one that's an all-star.
He said, LaMelo, I think, is going to be an all-star. Of the three players, I think LaMelo will end up being the best because at the time he compared him to Russell Westbrook. He said he can score and he can pass, and if he does everything right, he could be the best of the three.
Okay,
Hang on a second.
I want to make room for Hall of Famer Jackie McMullen, who's going to join us coming up next. And we'll put those questions to her. We've been kicking around. Who is the biggest threat to the Lakers? Is Embiid now the favorite in the MVP race? That's coming up next for you with Jackie Mack. Mason in Ireland, Momo in for John, 710 ESPN.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
What is going on? It is Wednesday. Thanks a lot for being out there. Thanks a lot for listening. We appreciate you. Momo is in for John Ireland today. John will return from his break on Friday. In the meantime, we are lucky to have Momo, and we are lucky right now to have Hall of Famer Jackie McMullen on the line. Jackie, thanks for coming on. How are you?
How you guys doing today?
Everything is good, Jackie. You know, I want to start with something weird, if that's okay. We were just talking about...
What else is new? You got Ramona there. I expect anything.
We were just talking about anything. Airplane etiquette. And what is the etiquette?
Okay.
You travel a lot. What is the etiquette for reclining your seat?
I never do it. Not even a little bit.
Wow.
Because I know what it's like. I know what it's like to be on the other side of that. So my son did a study abroad in Australia.
Oh, my God.
That is a long flight.
Yes, it is.
That is a long flight. We did not fly first class. We did just go from – we stopped in L.A., so we did L.A. to Melbourne. To Brisbane. Melbourne to Brisbane. We are 10 minutes into the flight, and the woman in front of me reclines her seat all the way back.
Wow.
All the way back. We had just had the drink service, you know, and she spilled my drink all over me because – I just, you know, she hit my drink and it spilled everywhere.
Yeah, sure.
And she was Australian, And before I even said anything, she just turned to me and said, "Don't even go there. This is how I'm going to be the whole flight." And I was like, what is going on right now? And I'm telling you, it is a long flight. And she, you know, they came back around with the drinks. And she did it to me again. I had wine spilled. So finally,
wow.
I actually got up. This is no lie. And moved to a middle seat.
Wow.
Because it was
wow.
better than dealing with that. Now, I will tell you
wow.
that my very annoyed family, daughter and husband, every time they went by, might have pulled that seat back up on the Aussie lass. I will say
yes.
that.
Yeah, girl.
Yes. See, I...
But you know what?
Jackie,
I just can't, I don't want that... It's already stressful enough to fly. I don't need the drama and the anger. So I just don't do it. I don't engage.
Yeah, I feel like it's my God-given right to recline my seat. Why would they put the recline button in there if you weren't supposed to recline?
Well, but you should think twice about it, because has anyone ever reclined fully on you? And what
yeah,
did that
they
feel
have.
Like?
Yeah, they yeah. have.
And what did that feel like?
You feel locked in, that's for sure.
Okay, and so what benefit do you get really from reclining the small amount that you do on a flight?
It's true. They
yeah, I'm
Jackie, thank you
on
so
you right
much
now,
for this.
You know?
This is what I did too. This is what I said. I said, Steve, do you think it's? I'm just considerate. I know what it's like. I think a little bit of recline is fine, but the full recline is a little too much and invasive. I don't like it when people do it to me. And I'm very sympathetic
right.
to who's behind me. So a little bit, like straight up and down, not as comfortable, but like an inch or two, fine. Full recline,
yep.
inconsiderate. Yep. And Mason was like,
I
nope,
think so. And have you ever seen that?
Right.
It went viral for a while. It was the meme of the guy, the woman who had reclined her seat all back, and he spent the entire flight just tapping. And I was like, who wants to engage in these reindeer games? Like, I have work to do usually on a plane, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Or at least an episode of Veep that I want to watch, one or the
sure.
other.
Yes.
You know?
All right,
I feel
well,
like
here's what we've been
episodes of Veep, by the way, every time.
Here's what
I've
we've been kicking
all.
Around, Jackie. Okay. We've been kicking around who the Lakers' biggest threat is now. Obviously, defending champions,
mm-hmm.
Looking to repeat in a world where right. Anthony Davis is healthy, and we assume that's going to happen. Who is the Lakers'
yeah,
biggest
I think
threat?
So. Oh, I think it's undoubtedly the Brooklyn Nets. You know, just in talking, I was doing a little reconnaissance over the last week or so for some stuff I was working on, and everybody feels the same way, that James Harden is all in. He's the model citizen there. He's sharing the ball. He's not worrying about shots or points. He, from what I understand, and I think, Ramona, you know this as well,
yep.
he's very embarrassed about how he blew his way out of Houston. With a little hindsight, he regrets it. He wants to refurbish his image. He has been a model citizen for the Nets. He's doing whatever the strength and conditioning guys ask. And so knowing that, and knowing that James Harden plans to stay in his lane, I know they don't play a lot of defense, but I think they can. I think they can, and I think they will when it matters. I think they're a super, super duper scary team.
So how do they all fit together when those three guys get back out on the court? Because we've only seen 5 games of that.
Right. I agree with that. But see, I think based on what I just said about Harden, you're right. If all three of them were their regular alpha male selves, you'd have an issue. But he's already made the determination, I'm not going to be the issue. I was the issue. I didn't like how it felt. I didn't like how it looked. I'm not going to be the issue. I want to win a championship. I'm really talented. If the ball comes to me at the end of the game, I know I can make a shot to win it. But I'm not going to get hung up on if it's me taking it. I'll be happy to pass it to one of these other two guys. And I think that solves a lot of their problems, Ramona.
You know, I just wonder, ego-wise, when it comes down to it, when it's for real, when you're in a playoff series, when you're in a playoff game,
mm-hmm.
how does Kyrie feel about not getting that shot? How does KD, how does James Harden? And I don't think we know until we see it, do we?
I suppose not, but Kyrie... There are very few people that he respects more than himself, and Kevin Durant is one of them. No,
yeah.
Kyrie believes he should have the ball in his hands at the end of the game, but if you say to him, all right, well, what if Kevin Durant has it? He's going to be like, I'm good with that. I really believe that. Now, you're right. Until we see it, we won't know. I worry if they lose, right? If they lose early, how do they handle losing? Durant has, I think, proven that he can handle it and handle it well and go on and still win. Harden has not. And Kyrie's had his moments, right?
Yep.
So if things get gnarly in the early going, then we'll find out what these guys are made of. But I think Durant, I think a lot of his temperament when he's in the game, when he's between the lines, I think a lot of his temperament. And if James Harden holds true to what he said and to this mantra that he has, that I don't care about shots, points, game winners, I just want that ring, I want to refurbish my reputation, then if Kyrie once in a while wants to go rogue, hey, the way he's playing right now, I want him to have the ball in his hands.
Mm. You know, Jack, the other team that is fascinating, and I think this is us as writers, we're always going to be focused on things like this, but the Sixers decide not to make that James Harden trade. You know, in some ways you could say, well, Houston wasn't going to trade Harden to Daryl Morey, and, you know, maybe they were in it and they wanted him, but it was maybe they were never really going to trade him there. But it is the road taken and the road not taken. The team that went for it and traded away all that depth and those four first-round picks, et cetera, and the team that held on to Ben Simmons and is going to play out the Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid partnership with, you know, one more time, and let's see if this movie works. Do you think it comes down to those two teams in the East?
Well, I just can't discount Milwaukee and Giannis, because they're starting to come on a little bit. But I love the Sixers, and I know both you and I had a chance to talk to Joel before the season began, and, you know, one of the stories he told me was being in the delivery room for the birth of his very first child, and as his I think they're married now. I know it was his fiance. I'm not sure if they're married at this point, but, you know, she's pushing out their first child together, and he gets a text saying, you didn't make all NBA, not even third team. And so, the greatest moment of your life, and a pretty bad one, too. And I think he just has been hell-bent ever since on, I'm going to win the MVP. I'm not just going to make all NBA. I'm going to win the MVP, and I'm going to get us where we need to go. And I also think, if you ask me one team that's going to make a move before the trade deadline, it's them. It's not going to be signing Blake Griffin like the Nets did. It's going to be something, I don't know what, but we keep hearing about all these pieces, right? They may or may not be available. Thaddeus Young, Rudy Gay, some of these other, veteran guys that
Kyle Lowry would just
give you some depth and some, Lowry would be unbelievable. I just don't know if that's going to happen. But if it does, wow. I love Kyle Lowry. How can you not? All that guy is about is winning. So I like the Sixers too, but I won't dismiss the Bucks out of hand. Giannis is too talented, and they're taking a different approach this year. They've been transparent about that, about trying to put things together in a way where they'll be fresh for the playoffs and try different things that make them a little more uncomfortable to see if it's going to get them where they want to go, since they haven't been able to get there in the past. Jrue Holiday hasn't really played enough with them for us to really judge that team, in my opinion. You know, he was out for safety and protocol, and he's so important to what they're trying to do.
Hey, last thing for you. You mentioned Joel Embiid, who is now the favorite in Vegas to win MVP. We are all over LeBron here in Los Angeles. If I had a vote, I would vote for LeBron. I don't know if you have a vote or not, but which way would you lean right now? You do. Which way would you lean?
Well, I think I'd lean towards Embiid only because he's shooting 50% from, of 70% or something crazy like that. I forget. I don't have it in front of me. He's shooting 40% from threes. He's dominating games. And the on-off numbers for him and the Sixers are just mind-boggling. However, I would also don't think people should look past Nikola Jokic and what he's done for his team and the numbers he's put up. And it's hard to look past Dame and Steph. I never think it's a two-man race. There's just all these incredibly talented teams. And I think LeBron got the reason Vegas changed its odds is obvious, right? They've faltered a bit now that Anthony Davis is on the sideline. Yeah. You could vote for LeBron for MVP every year and never, ever, ever be wrong. Now, the big question I have is, how will the Lakers handle LeBron on the second half of the season? Are they going to make him sit? We know he doesn't like to. Are they going to limit his minutes? Are they going to tell him, look, forget about the MVP. Let's just get you geared up and healthy to win another championship. Are they going to manage him in a different way? And that will affect, Momo, you know this, that will affect how voters vote. It will.
Yep.
Win-loss records affect how voters vote. How, if a team's surging or slumping towards the end of the year, affects how people vote. So whatever our vote is today is irrelevant 3 weeks from now.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
And I think, Jack, I was kind of a few weeks ago, maybe a month ago, I was like, this is LeBron. Come on. I mean, he's played every
100%.
Game. He's And it's just been since Anthony Davis has been out, like LeBron hasn't been that same MVP level, and it's not really his fault. I mean, And, you know, Anthony Davis out, Schroeder was out. They played a really tough schedule. He also missed a game, which I thought was interesting right before the All-Star break.
Yeah, he missed the Sacramento game, yeah.
That was one of his,
but that was so
that was
smart.
One of his claims.
That was so
it
smart.
Is. Yeah, and I think that might so actually smart. End up being one of the issues when we get down to it is, you know, that was one of the feathers that LeBron had in his cap, that he played every game, and he did that a couple years ago. It was last year in Cleveland. He played every game, mm-hmm. every playoff game, and now you're not going to be able to say that, and I think when you yeah. miss one, it opens the door for you to miss more. You know, I'm just
well,
wondering.
And they should open the door for him to miss more, and here's the thing I'd say about yeah. that too, Ramona. Joel Embiid's played 30 games. LeBron's played 36. I think Steph's played 34. Jokic, I think, has played 36. Mm-hmm. And by the way, we've gone almost however long this phone call has lasted. We haven't even mentioned the Clippers and Kawhi Leonard, by the way.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
They're pretty good, you know.
They are.
They're
they
pretty
are.
Good.
I mean,
and we haven't seen the best of them yet. And he just very quietly.
Maybe the biggest threat to the Lakers is the Clippers, I think.
Yeah, I mean, he goes very quietly goes about just being incredibly good. And it'll all come down to Paul George and, you know, everybody will be watching Playoff P, right? So
Playoff P.
That's what it comes down to for them.
All right. Hey, listen, Jackie, thank you very much for coming on. I appreciate it. Always an honor to have Hall of Famer Jackie McMullen on the show. Thanks for doing this.
Steve. 1 inch on your reclining seat. That's it, dude.
There it
We're
is.
Coming for you.
Just
We're
1 inch.
Let me tell
okay.
you something.
All right.
Listen to Jackie McMullen. Jackie has, of all the people in my career, I think she's probably given me the best career advice over the course of my year. That, so this is good life advice now, Steve. Listen to Jackie.
Good life advice. Okay.
She's
inch.
A Hall of
One
Famer.
Inch.
Hall of Famer. Listen
all right, my
her.
Man. All right, you guys
Thanks.
Have a great day.
Thanks, Jackie. You too.
Take care. Thanks, Jack.
There's Jackie McMullen. Yeah.
Did she sway you? It's also the way she says it. Like, she doesn't say, well, you know, I think it'd be nicer if you just – and she goes, no, yeah. come on, what are you doing?
I'll tell you what.
Like Boston.
Coming up next for you, I'm fascinated by this. NFL yeah. players becoming more free in dictating their future.
Mm-hmm.
We're seeing this a lot now. We saw it with Dak. We saw it with Russell Wilson. And players who are actually betting on themselves. Let's get into that coming up next. Plus, somebody said something. I'm doing some podcasts right now, guesting yep. on podcasts right now, Ramona. Last night, yep. somebody said something to me, and I kind of took offense at it. And I want to bring it up coming up next. Mason Ireland, 710 ESPN.